The Tom Woods Show, episode 2062.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, folks, if you have had it up to here with the COVID irrationality, you are going to love my free ebook, COVID Charts CNN Forgot. Pick it up at chartstheyforgot.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. I am joined today by my friend James Dellingpole, who is just such a great guy. I just love him. I just love the guy, okay? And I am prefacing this interview with a little bit of a cautionary note for the more delicate among you, just to say that James is going to say some things that are going to shock and scandalize you. But, you know, occasionally, we all can stand to be shocked and scandalized. And I don't think I do enough shocking and scandalizing, frankly. And look, I agree with James on a lot. And on other things, I'm not so sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if he turned out to be right. But either way, I just love the guy. You know, officer, take me away. I love James Dellingpole. I don't know what to tell you. So I'm just letting you know, folks, buckle that seatbelt, because here we go. Hi, everybody. I am so excited. I know I always say I am so excited to have this guest, but this time I really, really mean it. I just stole that line from you, James. I never say that. But every episode of the Dellingpod starts off with you saying, I know I say this every time, but I'm really excited to have this particular guest on. But I am excited to have James Dellingpole on, who is the host of the Dellingpod, which has my favorite opening bumper music of any podcast in world history. You're the author of numerous books. You've been a columnist. I want you to, can you just introduce yourself to my folks? Because you are like the best person in the whole UK, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, I'll keep it simple. I am the host of the second best podcast in the whole world. Obviously, we know what the best is, Tom. You are the man. But yeah, and that's what I do, really. My wife thinks I'm an English country gentleman. She says it quite disparagingly, meaning get off your ass, husband, and do some bloody work, rather than going out riding and hunting and shooting yet again. I think I'm a gadfly. I'm an irritant to the establishment, which I was formerly part of, I think, or almost part of. And now I'm very much a rebel against the system. I want to destroy it. It's corrupt and it's ripe for destruction. What else? Yeah, I'm cultured. At the same time, I like the odd spliff. I'm a man of many parts, Tom.
No doubt, which is why your show is so interesting. It's not just an economic show or a religion show or a culture show. It's everything. It's the Dellingpod, in the same way that the Tom Woods Show is not the Libertarian News Hour. It's the Tom Woods Show. So it's going to have the occasional odd episode on just something that I find interesting that I think the listeners might also find interesting. As we were connecting, as I was sending you the link to hop on with me, I went over to Patreon, which we all know has its problems, but yeah. I went over there to make sure, because I've had to change credit cards in the last few months, and I just wanted to make sure that my contribution to the Dellingpod was ongoing. And it says I'm current, even though I have not given them the new credit card information, so I'll probably still do that. But I checked that specifically because I thought, if there's one thing I want to keep on doing, it's supporting James Dellingpole. So that's my priority for this morning.
Yes, enough. I mean, I already had enough reasons to love you, Tom, but I really, really do appreciate it. I mean, you know, you're putting your money where your mouth is, and it's, yeah, I do appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, I think of it this way. I get tremendous intellectual pleasure out of your podcast, and I'm also very entertained, so I ought to chip in a bit. In fact, you know, sometimes I've thought this way. I think about some of the music I enjoy, even though most people are using streaming services these days, you know, there are still CD players and stuff out there. You could still have a CD that you bought 30 years ago, and it's still quite functional, and you paid $10, $15 for it, and it has generated 30 years worth of enjoyment. It's incredible, like 50 cents a year, how much enjoyment I get. I actually sometimes think I probably ought to send them a check or something. You know, I think if they weren't all terrible people, I think about this a lot, about all the joy I get from relatively little expenditure. I get so much joy from your show for zero, I just couldn't continue that. So I sent you a little dough. Well, and by the way, even if you as an English gentleman, even if you'd been living in an ancient castle or something, I still would have sent you the money, because I was just talking to Adam Curry, formerly of MTV, about this, that it doesn't matter to me if my contribution is what keeps you from starving. I mean, of course, I would donate if that were the case. But even if you don't need it for that, I want you to have it because it's right for you to have it because you give me joy. And it's not like a, well, anyway, I'll just leave it there. So I just want you to have it.
No, it's interesting you say that. I don't know whether you know, I've got this Telegram chat group and I've kept it private, which means that hardly anyone can find how to join it. And I kind of quite like the exclusivity of it.
Yeah.
I can be quite brutal about like sacking people. Like I call my followers my sharklings, but I expect certain standards of my sharklings. And if one of the sharklings annoys me, then I'm afraid I'm quite ruthless about, I don't know what you do with sharklings. Do you gaff them over the head or something or feed them to bigger sharks or something? Anyway, there was somebody the other day who was kind of quizzing me about my financial status, you know, trying to sort of work out whether I was too rich to give to or not. And I was thinking, hang on a second. You've probably in your life gone and bought, I don't know, well, maybe this is a cruel accusation, but he might have bought a U2 album or a Madonna album. These people are not short of cash, and yet you support them nonetheless. I don't think we should start judging people on whether they're... I mean, look at Joe Rogan. How much does he make? Like billions. I mean, not billions, but a lot. And yet people still donate to him. I think that's how it should be. If you like the product, you should buy it.
Yeah, well, as I said to Adam, one of the classic examples of this, then we'll get onto something other than money in just a second, but
yeah.
is of course, Jordan Peterson, because he was making a fortune on Patreon, and everyone knew it. Everyone knew he was making a fortune, and they still sent him money, because by sending him money, they were sending a message of sorts, that this was a way for the unheard to be heard, you know, to put their money where their mouths were, and to say, you really have improved my life or maybe turned my life around. And the thing about Jordan Peterson is he has some, definitely some admirable qualities, but when you look at what he's saying, this is all just common sense from 50 years ago. This isn't any radical new insight. This is what pretty much any reasonably well-adjusted person a generation or two ago would have said, but today that's right wing.
I think he's oversold. I mean, I don't want to diss him because he's got his problems, but I do think he is oversold. You know, he's sometimes right, sometimes he's not, but he hasn't really entered the fray properly in the last 2 years, has he? He's been fighting battles that were maybe worth fighting before the world went completely mad. But I tend to judge people now. I've lost an awful lot of friends over this, and I've lost an awful lot of idols. So many of my idols turn out to have feet of clay, and I've just completely rejected them. I don't have shrines to them in my temple, put it that way anymore. But I think the last 2 years have been a real test of people's moral character. You know, when tyranny appears, real tyranny appears with its serried ranks on the horizon and starts marching towards you, do you run away or do you stand your ground and fight it? And so many people have run away or even sort of tried to join the enemy. It's shocking.
Well, on the Peterson thing, I'll just say I said exactly the same thing. And if somebody wants to sift through my half a billion tweets, they'll even find me saying it, that Jordan Peterson was missing in action through all this. And then I had someone correct me and say, well, let's bear in mind, he's really been struggling with some very, very difficult personal issues. And I thought, okay, I will cut him some slack for that. And in recent months, he's been pretty good on the COVID stuff. I mean, I would say borderline excellent on it. But I hear what you're saying. But let's go to James Dellingpole, though, because when I first got to know you, it was, I think you probably were part of kind of like the UK equivalent of the American conservative movement. You might have been on the right flank of it, but you were still a part of it. And I think I was a little bit of a part of ours for a while until I saw how feckless and corrupt and stupid it was. But then suddenly I listened to the Dellingpod, and this doesn't sound like the James Dellingpole who would warn me about the problems with environmentalists. Something has just gone to another level. I would like you to talk about your evolution, because we've all had it. Anybody with a brain has had an evolution, you know, if not over the past couple of years, maybe some of them have had it over a longer span of time. Very few of us start at the position where you and I are now, but a lot of people start and stop where you and I used to be.
Yeah. I hate to use the word normie because instantly it frightens off normies because they think, oh, this person is one of those tinfoil hat crazies who's gone down the rabbit hole. Nevertheless, I would say that 2 years ago, I was definitely a normie.
Oh, that recently?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I tell you what, it is like the events of the last 2 years have been literally the apocalypse. And by literally the apocalypse, I mean, apocalypse means unveiling, doesn't it? It's the curtain has been pulled back and suddenly I see the world as it really is, rather than as it has been presented to me and pretty much everyone else in the world throughout my life. I mean, I think that the world is a cradle-to-grave brainwashing exercise. I think that the education system does it. I think the Hollywood and TV definitely does it. The music industry does it. We are programmed to look at the world in a certain way. And once you realize that this is all a fabrication, an illusion, life gets a lot more interesting. I mean, in some ways, it gets more complicated and difficult because you can no longer talk to normies about the world because they believe one thing and you see it completely differently. And even within my family, there are divisions over this. And I'm sure that listeners are having the same experiences with their families because no family is on one side or the other. In fact, one of the sad things about these times is the division it has created. But for example, there are members of my family who think that the so-called pandemic of the last 2 years was a genuine thing, that this deadly new virus sprung up, whether it was released from, you know, whether it was created in China or whether it, you know, it was natural, doesn't really matter. But they believe that coronavirus and COVID-19 were things, genuinely scary things, and that the vaccines, so-called vaccines that were rolled out, were a necessary corrective to this pandemic and so on. I, of course, think that the whole thing is a massive scam. So how do you talk to people about, for example, vaccine injuries, when as far as they're concerned, these are a kind of very, very rare byproduct, which you've got to be really unlucky to get? How do you explain to them? It's really hard when you try and refer them to sites which demonstrate that vaccines are problematic. And they go, oh, I don't like the graphics on this site. And I don't like the way they talk in sort of conspiratorial terms. It's very, very hard to speak for those of us who are red-pilled or black-pilled or white-pilled or down the rabbit hole to speak to people who are still in normie mode. Hey, by the way, I was thinking of another thing. I can't remember when it was that we last spoke. I was definitely not as far down the rabbit hole as I am now. In fact, did I tell you what my awakening thing was? Because it wasn't, weirdly enough, it wasn't the COVID thing.
I'm afraid to ask, James. What was it?
Well, bizarrely, it was an American thing. It was the stolen presidential election. And here's the thing. What really, really puzzled me was it was obvious to me, and I had money on it as well, money bet on it. It was obvious to me that Donald Trump, for better or worse, was a shoo-in to win a second term as president. Because the guy he was up against, I don't know whether you noticed this, he was senile, incontinent, unpopular, didn't go on the campaign trail at all because his minders were so terrified he might put his foot in his mouth, et cetera, et cetera. There was no way this guy could win. And yet, mysteriously, he won. Now, that was a sort of slightly curious part. What was the really curious part was when all the evidence started coming out about Dominion voting machines and truckloads of ready-made ballots being driven in from New York and camera footage of people cheating, and there was so much evidence. And yet the American court system, which I'd been taught to admire, you know, the Supreme Court, been brought up, believe this was a kind of a model justice system, far better than anything we've got anywhere else in the world, and yada, yada, yada. And I saw our media in the UK and the US, which normally holds bad actors to account, or so I thought, was instead endorsing this lie completely, wasn't even questioning it, didn't want to look into it. Now, I know this is all water under the bridge, this is all past now, and it all seems like irrelevant. But at the time, I felt really, really shocked by this stuff because I thought, well, why are conservative journalists like myself, why are they not questioning it like I'm questioning it? Because they've got access to the same information. It's not like I'm Mr. Scoop, Mr. Mr. Investigative Reporter, who's suddenly discovered this secret information that nobody else knows about Dominion voting machines and video evidence and so on. And yet they weren't even looking into this stuff. You'd have thought that being a journalist, you'd be quite curious to discover, what's the truth of this matter? They didn't want to look. And this, I've seen since, in the 2 years since, has been the playbook of the media. The media is not doing its job. They just completely surrendered the past. The media is part of the problem. I felt this keenly as a journalist because I became a journalist because I'm curious. Wherever the facts take me, that's where I'll go. I'm just interested in stuff, finding out what's really true and what's not true. And you would have thought all the other journalists out there would have felt the same, but apparently not. So that was the beginning of my awakening.
All right, I'm thinking about this in terms of something a thinker from the 1990s, Sam Francis, called anarcho-tyranny. And he would say, what we live under is anarcho-tyranny, that we look at the functions we expect the state to perform, like providing security for people. We have anarchy because they're absolutely terrible at it, and crime runs rampant and nothing is done. And that's only gotten worse in the U.S. So we have anarchism in that colloquial sense. But then we have tyranny in areas where people shouldn't be bothered. The average person is put upon and forced to comply with crazy regulations 24 hours a day. So we have anarcho-tyranny. And there's an analog of that in what you just said, that you were saying the media is not doing its job, so there's the anarcho. But then, by contrast, let's see what it is doing. When it does do its quote-unquote job, it's lies.
Yes.
So on the one hand, it ignores things that it should at least follow up on. For example, this Canadian trucker convoy. So the media is, quote-unquote, doing its job in Canada by explaining to us that the truckers are white supremacists. I would rather it not do that job.
That is so true. So I've completely stopped reading the newspapers. Well, actually, that's not quite true, because my wife insists on having a newspaper because she's quite traditional. So I'll occasionally glance at the newspaper to see what she's reading, what nonsense is going into her head. And a conservative newspaper called Sunday Telegraph was reporting on the truckers, and it was reporting them on them from the perspective of the sort of report that Justin Trudeau might have written, or that the mayor of Ottawa might have written, or that the head of Ottawa police might have written. It was, you're right, it was presenting the truckers as the problem, and they were in danger. I can't remember the details, but they were in danger of overwhelming the police. And you're thinking, hang on a second, this is not a perspective that would necessarily be shared by your readership. You are supposed to be a conservative newspaper. And at the very least, you ought to be neutral on this issue. But you definitely ought not to be advancing the agenda of the globalists, who fundamentally want to turn all your readers into digital slaves. They're not friends of your readers. And as a newspaper, surely your basic job is to look after the interests of your readers.
Let's go back a number of years. I want to know, looking back on the James Delling poll of just a few years ago, what did he nevertheless see clearly about the world?
Well, it depends on how far you go back. Because actually, looking back, there have always been times in my life, because I've often asked myself, why is it that I've seen through what's going on when so many of my colleagues have not? Now, one possibility is that I am a complete tinfoil hat loon who's completely cut loose from reality. But another is, a more favorable interpretation, is that maybe there's something in my character which led me to see through the bullshit. And when I was at university, I was at Oxford with the current generation of politicians. So I was there. I was friends at Oxford with two prime ministers. First of all, with David Cameron, and then with our current prime minister, Boris Johnson. I knew these people as equals. And when I went up to Oxford, I was very, very keen to fit in, to become part of the establishment. And I had a slight chip on my shoulder in that I felt that I did not come from a posh enough background. Although I'd been privately educated, I hadn't been to the very poshest private school, Eton. And although, I was comfortably middle class, I didn't have my own estate, my large country estate with horses and things like that, or anything like that. But I was desperate to fit in. And even at the time, I recognized that there was something in me which they, the establishment type, saw as being not quite right. It was as if I was incapable of, I mean, and actually they were right in this. They could see that I was not prepared to play the game. I wouldn't buy into everything that they seemed to believe. And looking back, I realized that this was a good thing, because imagine if back then I'd succeeded in joining the establishment. I'd probably be a member of the government or in the House of Lords or working for an investment bank or something. But I would be part of a system that I consider to be fundamentally evil. Now, we can fast forward a bit to the stage in my journalistic career when I first realized that the world is not as it's presented to us. And that was when I started looking into the green movement and into the whole climate change industry. And I discovered something rather surprising, which was that despite all the saturation media coverage, you've got every environmental concern going from, I don't know, diminishing polar bear populations to sinking Pacific islands to melting glaciers to the melting polar ice caps to all the litany of environmental woes. None of these things on close examination turned out to be real. They were all media fabrications, and yet they were repeated ad nauseam in the press and by designated propagandists like David Attenborough. And the second thing I discovered is that all the measures being introduced to supposedly save the planet were actually dishonest and or counterproductive. An obvious example of this is wind turbines, which I call bird-chomping, bat-slicing eco-crucifixes, because they're a really crappy way of generating energy. They don't really do much to save the planet because, you know, you think about all the rare earth minerals that go into making these things, which have to be mined under hideous conditions. I mean, in their lifetime, they probably don't pay off all the kind of environmental damage they do in making them. So I realized that there was some kind of scam going on this. A, we were being given a false prospectus about the nature of the environmental problems. But secondly, the measures being forced through by government fiat to dealing with these things like solar farms, like wind farms, like et cetera, these were completely ineffective. And what I realized is that the environmental agenda has nothing whatsoever to do with loving nature or saving the environment. It is just an elite project by corrupt crony capitalists who want effectively to screw the taxpayer with all these environmental subsidies so that they can get fat and rich on the proceeds of this so-called renewable energy, which really ought to be called unreliable energy, because that's what it is. So that was my first inkling that the world is not as it is presented to us in the media.
Now, the kind of feeling I have toward the people who are perpetrating this hoax is quite different from the feeling I have from the normie who not only goes along with it, but as with COVID, holds it over everyone's head that they're not complying with this or that, or they're not concerned about climate change, whatever. I expect a crony capitalist to do his best to screw me. I expect that. But I have a special contempt for somebody who has so little curiosity, so little natural curiosity, that he doesn't even bother ever to ask, is the world really as it is presented to me? Is this all real? Or is this not something that is being done by people who are laughing at me behind my back at my sheer gullibility? I can't say, oh, it's not his fault. How is he supposed to know? Well, how do I know then? You know, I didn't come out of the womb knowing the truth about the world. I had to look for it.
Yeah. I think we have to be forgiving though, Tom, because we have to, look, I would imagine that there was a stage in your life probably not so long ago when you too would have qualified.
Oh, yes, but let me interrupt you here for just a second as you're trying to be magnanimous against my nastiness. I'll say this. If they come around, then all is forgiven and we'll just forget all about it. But while they're in this condition, they are an enemy. And by the way, when I was stupid, as you're about to get at, I'm glad I was treated that way. I'm glad somebody finally said to me, look, Woods, you got it all wrong. And you're a dope to just be going along. I'm glad somebody basically rhetorically took me by the collar and woke me up instead of saying, oh, I understand why you agree with the Rockefellers and I understand why you want to, you know, screw yourself. And I don't want them talking to me that way. I want them talking to me with the urgency that the situation requires.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, it's true. I'm torn. In fact, weirdly enough, before this, we recorded this, I was trying to write. I've started writing on Substack and Locals to try and, you know, exercise my writing skills again. And I was writing about this very issue that it's a bit like in August 1944 in France, where it turns out that for the previous few years, all the people who've been collaborating with the Nazis in some way or another, whether sleeping with them or betraying Jews to the Gestapo or whatever, it turns out they were all fighting for the resistance all along. This is what's happening now in the media. I don't know whether you've noticed it, that people who throughout this fake pandemic have been endorsing lockdowns and going on with government policy and wearing masks and posting photographs of themselves on Twitter of themselves wearing masks, like it's all some sort of jolly wheeze and so on. I mean, I'm particularly angry with the media people because, you know, as a fellow media person, I feel that, you know, I'm in a position to judge them because they could be me and they're not. These people are now starting saying, yeah, wasn't it crazy? All this crazy stuff we were doing these last 18 months or so. And yeah, maybe we got it wrong. I think too right, you got it wrong. And before you should be welcomed into our camp, you should first show some contrition. Because this wasn't just kind of some thing that I don't think they should be allowed to write off the last 2 years as just some kind of crazy craziness that was completely, you know, unavoidable, just a thing that happened for no reason and we all fell for it. Because until they acknowledge that this stuff was very, very carefully planned by some very, very bad people and that the problem has not gone away, then we are no closer to addressing the problem. They have to fess up. They have to, first of all, admit that they've done wrong. Then they have to acknowledge why it was they made their mistakes, i.e. the media and the political classes are irredeemably corrupt. And then, and only then, are they in a position to address the problem which we now face, which is how do we wake up the populace quickly enough to prevent this narrow and dangerous elite from destroying us and or enslaving us. That's the problem we face now. And time is running out.
Well, let's talk about some specifics in the UK where you are. So the last time we spoke was quite a while ago. I was on your show and you were on mine. And things were pretty grim in the UK. Now, I felt like through this whole thing, this is faint praise, but the UK has been just behind the US in terms of sanity. And this is faint praise because both places have been completely insane. But I'd rather be in the UK than Australia. And I'd rather be in the UK than a lot of other places. And we were very pessimistic about the future of the West End and culture. And you can't do this to society and expect no long-term consequences. But at the same time, we've also been reading about the loosening of restrictions, although we've been down that road before in the UK, but we've heard about that and that things are getting back to normal to some degree. And maybe it might be conceivable that I could even travel there someday. So do you have an updated assessment of how things are?
Yeah. Look, I think that we are living currently through the phony war stage. I don't know whether you know about the phony war. The phony war was what they called the early war years when war had broken out. I think Britain had been driven out of France. We'd left Dunkirk. But there seemed to be a lull in hostilities whereby we were at war with Germany, but it didn't really feel like we were at war with Germany. And I think this is what's going on now. I think that call them the powers that be, whoever it is that really runs this country and other countries and makes the decisions, because I don't think it's the government. I think they're just puppets. They've clearly decided that the pandemic scare is starting to play out, that this so-called Omicron variant, I don't really believe in these variants, but nevertheless, the National Health Service was not being overwhelmed by people just dying of this supposedly deadly thing. And I think they recognized that they could not push this particular narrative any further, that people were starting to be skeptical. People were starting, in the UK, were starting to say things like, if they have another lockdown, I am not going to obey it. I've bloody had enough. It's just pointless. And also, people were refusing to take their booster shots. They'd had quite a lot of people who had the first and the second so-called vaccines, which aren't vaccines, but they weren't taking the booster because, A, they weren't getting all the freedoms that they'd been promised if only they had another jab. You know, they were still unable to travel. But B, a lot of them had either experienced bad side effects themselves or seen other people having bad side effects. And so I think the authorities recognized on some level that they had to find a different way of screwing us all over. So what we're experiencing at the moment in the UK is a sort of temporary lull in hostilities while the bad guys plan their next move. And I think the danger is that the public are going to get complacent and go, oh, it's all over. We can get our lives back and we can travel freely. And now the economy is going to recover. Well, I'm sorry, guys, but you're about to get a very, very nasty shock. Have you looked how much inflation there is baked into the economy? We're probably going to get double-digit inflation by the third quarter of this year. We've had businesses which have been wrecked, which are never going to recover. And we haven't even talked about the number of people who are going to be killed or maimed by the effects of these clot shots, you know, the kids who are dying of myocarditis and things like that, the footballers and other sportsmen who are collapsing on the sporting field as a result of these death jabs that they've been encouraged to take and for which the vaccine companies have no liability. So I think we've got a heap of trouble coming our way. But yeah, at the moment, we're in a sort of dream state where we think it's all going to be okay. We've woken up from the nightmare. Well, I'm mixing my metaphors now. We're in a stage where we think it's all going to be okay. And I think that we're about to get a rude awakening.
All right. Well, let me make two comments on that. First, there's a woman, she's a doctor. I forget what her credentials are, but I think they're quite significant. Although I've discovered that credentials don't matter to me as much as I thought they did.
No.
They're almost
a handicap. It's almost like, oh, what are his credentials? Right. Well, this person sounds way too credentialed.
And not to mention, we've discovered all of a sudden, did you realize that almost all epidemiologists are would-be totalitarians and hypochondriacs? I mean, these are like the craziest people in the world.
Yeah.
Anyway, let me say the two things I wanted to say. This woman, her name's Leanna Wen, and she comments on CNN a lot. And she has favored very harsh restrictions. She wants bans on interstate travel unless you're vaccinated, you know, in the U.S., things like that. And very, very recently, like within just a matter of days, she was on television saying, it really does make sense for us to start taking the masks off now. I mean, now it really, a lot of things pointing to why that makes sense. Now, I'm not going to say, oh, I'm so glad Leanna Wen has come to see No, she's a terrible person. I don't care what she says. But what was interesting about it were the comments on Twitter from her own people who are so broken by this. Psychologically, they are so broken that they're now turning on her. They don't ever want to take those masks off. See, I was thinking, well, when Fauci someday says, you know, in 2047, when he's 112 or whatever, when he finally says it's all clear, how does he get the people he's terrorized to go along with it? And it really is a problem. It's interesting how these people have been permanently broken. That's one thing I want to say. But the other thing is, one good thing that comes out of this, and I don't say I'm glad we endured it because of this, but it is a silver lining, is I think at least marginally, people skeptical of climate change, there will be more of them now because it fits the template exactly. It's the emergency situation that requires the experts to dictate what we should do. It's the every priority in your life needs to be subservient to this one, and it's based on modeling that turns out to be false every single time, but it's always false in one direction. It's never false saying there's going to be less warming than we thought or whatever. It's always hysterical over, you know, insane modeling. The model is so exact. The template is exactly what we just had with COVID. And so I think there will be more people who will be willing to say, I don't care what letters you have at the end of your name. You're an insane lunatic and an enemy of society, and I'm not complying. That's my hope.
I hope you're right, Tom. I'll address the climate change issue in a moment, but on your first point about masks and stuff, it's true. We have just reached the point. I don't know what it's like in. Well, actually, you never had to wear masks in Florida, did you? Is that right?
There were county level mandates, right. But most of the time you could just walk into a store and nobody would say anything. And if they did say something, you could decide, well, I'll comply just because I need to be in here or not. And usually I would just leave and I would just ostentatiously leave so that, you know, okay, you just lost somebody by making that demand of me.
Exactly. That's the free market speaking. Yeah. So we had this stage where there was a mask mandate, and to go into a supermarket, you supposedly had to wear a mask unless you were mask exempt. Well, naturally, I declared myself mask exempt. And so I was the guy in my local supermarket. They knew I was the guy who didn't wear a mask and was never going to wear a mask. And they didn't try and challenge me on it. And they were cool about it. Anyway, now they've relaxed this rule so that now you don't have to wear masks. But the supermarkets, rather than go, hey, our customers are free not to wear masks, they still have signs outside saying, even though it's no longer mandatory to wear masks, you may feel more comfortable wearing a mask. So something like that, sort of implying that actually they'd rather you still wore the masks. And it's amazing how many of their customers have gone along with this. Presumably they were pushing an open door with the suggestion. I think a lot of people are going to be wearing masks for the rest of their lives. It's going to be one of the terrible legacies of this mendacious pandemic.
Hey, folks, let me take a minute to remind you of an important item on your to-do list. And this item is not something you think about as you're growing up, but now that you're an adult, you have to do it. If there's somebody out there who relies on your financial support, it could be a child, an aging parent, even a business partner, you need life insurance. It gives you the peace of mind that if something happens to you, your loved ones would have a financial cushion for rent or mortgage payments, loans, whatever. And since life insurance typically gets more expensive as you get older, it's smart to get a policy now rather than later. Well, Policy Genius is your one-stop shop to find and buy the insurance you need. Head to policygenius.com and answer a few questions. In minutes, you can compare personalized quotes from top companies to find your lowest price. You could save 50% or more on life insurance by comparing quotes with Policy Genius. The team of licensed experts at Policy Genius will help you understand your options and apply for the policy you choose. The Policy Genius team works for you, not the insurance companies. You can trust them to offer unbiased help and advocate for you at every step until you're covered. They don't add on extra fees. They don't sell your info to third parties. They have thousands of five-star reviews. Since 2014, they've helped over 30 million people shop for insurance. Head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. Let me ask you this. I find that a lot of the podcasters I listen to themselves don't really listen to a lot of podcasts, and I get that. Whether or not it's a podcast, are there any sources that you're particularly fond of, people you trust to have a good, sound opinion on an important issue?
The thing is, Tom, I am so far down the rabbit hole.
Oh, no. You can't find any?
No, I can. I'm about to tell you. My go-to source of wacko craziness, and there's enough sense in here that for me to just like, I'm addicted. Have you come across Cliff High?
I have not.
Okay. Well, Cliff High, he's told me he communicates with alien entities, or has done. And one of his theories, let me disclaimer, you don't have to buy into all this stuff. You just have to take what you want and ignore the rest. But his theory is that ultimately this world is the elites, the cabal, whoever, the powers that be, are acting in the service of some kind of alien intelligence, which he calls the bug. Because so much of what is happening in the world is quintessentially anti-human. I mean, I'm of the view that left to our own devices, we would not be having wars. We would just be trying to get on and live our lives and raise our children and spend quality time outdoors and doing all the things that I think we're naturally predisposed towards doing. I don't think that we are designed for invading other countries. I mean, okay, inevitably we have a bit of aggression built within us, you know, for men particularly, for reasons of defending their family from dangerous people. But generally, I think if we were left to our own devices, we would all be living in a kind of an almost prelapsarian idyll. And that actually the problem in the world is this narrow predator elite, the central bankers, the people who really run the world, the people who, the people at the Federal Reserve, for example, who are just kind of printing money and devaluing the dollar to the point where it's about to collapse any second. The predator class that generates wars and actually sort of backs both sides in order that they can profit from the chaos and from the arms trade and so on. So I quite like this theory that there is a criminal elite working in the service of a kind of either an alien intelligence or, I mean, I think I've become a much stronger believing Christian since our last chat, in the service of the devil, if you like, whoever or whatever the devil is.
All right. Well, this is a step I can't quite take, at least the first one.
Right.
Okay. But the thing is, I have to say, though, James, if it turned out that was the case, I would be the least surprised person on earth after you. You know, I wouldn't be surprised to discover it. And then the second thing you just said about Christianity, well, this is something I've said on one of my episodes not too long ago, where I said that I have known people who have suddenly become very interested in Christianity, not because they were inspired by the great deeds of historical figures or they were moved by Christ's passion, but rather because the excruciating, extraordinarily organized nature of the evil we face, it's so systematic, seems like it demands some explanation other than a natural one.
Yes. I think that's that. I mean, I don't know what it's been the same with you. I know so many people who found, I don't know what the phrase is that without making it sound cheesy, but which have found God or come to Christ or whatever. These phrases make me feel slightly uncomfortable. But at the same time, I do think that what's happening now in the world is a massive spiritual struggle between good and evil. And of course, it can be understood perfectly well on the material level, you know, just greedy people doing the wrong thing. You know, you don't have to bring the devil into it if you don't want to. But I think that the devil adds and God adds a level of understanding. And I went to one of those fancy boarding schools where there was a chapel and you had to attend chapel 7 days a week and twice on Sundays. So I had a traditional Church of England upbringing. But the thing that was never really emphasized in our kind of religious instruction was that this religious stuff is actually, it's more than a metaphor. This stuff is real and it actually works. That actually, if you believe in this divine power, he has your back. It's amazing. I mean, this stuff is not made up stuff to justify our fear of death and comfort us. It is actually real. So, I'm sorry, I've been distracted by dogs coming into the room. Can you shut the door? Doing a podcast.
You want the dog?
Yeah, I have the dog, but just don't shut the door. Right. Tom, are you there?
I am. I thought you were telling the dog you were doing a podcast.
No,
and I thought, what an odd person.
I don't mind like millions of people listening to me on the podcast, but I really hate my family listening to me doing the podcast. I don't want them to know what I think.
No, the thing is, that's not something I have the ability to keep from the family. They know pretty darn well, you know, my daughters, they know what their dad thinks. But by the way, that's an interesting point. I don't sit them down and say, all right, today is your lesson on climate change. Like, I don't do that to them. Mm. But it comes up incidentally, doesn't it? These sorts of things. And after a while, they kind of know, I think I know what Dad's answer to this would be. Like, they don't even need to ask anymore. They can do the analysis for themselves.
Yes. I'm afraid so. To the point where I might as well not even bother speaking ever again, because they know what my position on any issue is, and it's one where they take the mickey out of me, because they know that I'm ridiculous because I'm dad or I'm husband, and all I talk about is just kind of crazy rubbish.
What was your opinion of this whole Joe Rogan thing, by the way?
Oh, I mean, this is what happens when you take on the powers that be. I mean, look, Obama, for example. He's quite a senior member of the cabal, isn't he? And of course, he's going to lend his weight to this campaign to de-platform Joe Rogan. I just think that One of the horrible, I hate talking about the culture wars because I think they are a complete distraction from the really bad stuff that's going on. I think they were almost designed, you know, we'll get them talking about pronouns while we take over the world and enslave them. I mean, that seems to be the thing. And we'll get all the clever commentators who could be fighting this really bad stuff we're doing. I'm not going to name any names, but I don't need to, because it's basically everyone in the right-wing commentaria. We're going to get them really worked up about, you know, statues and stuff like that. And meanwhile, we're going to collapse the world economy. We're going to destroy everyone's jobs. We're going to make up this virus. We're going to inject them with this stuff, which is probably a kill shot, or which is going to stop them reproducing. And they're going to think that they're fighting important battles when it's a complete distraction. Anyway, I distracted myself with my own rant. What was I saying? What did you ask me?
Well, I'm trying to... my memory is so bad at my age, but... Oh, well, the point was that they distract us with these sorts of things, and then the right wing and the left wing get distracted. And then we argue with each other, so now we hate each other instead of focusing our anger on the right people.
Well, totally, Tom. I mean, left and right, this is one of my, you know, along with realizing that God is real and he's got our back, and that, by the way, I believe angels are real and demons are real, by the way. Probably this is too out there for you, but I do. I mean, I just know it. but I don't believe in left and right. These are part of the false paradigm that we're taught about. But actually, they are illusions. They give us a false sense of agency, of control over our lives. That, if I vote for the blue party, I will get X. But if I vote for the red party, I will get Y. When in fact, blue and red are offering the same crap. And ultimately, it's not up to them. It's up to their secret controllers.
I'll say something about the two parties in the U.S. I used to say back in the Ron Paul days that there's just no difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. Because when it came down to it on the big issues, on central banking, they agreed because they took no public position. So, of course, they agreed. No one talked about central banking. Or when it came to the U.S. foreign policy establishment, that drew equally from both parties. They would have disagreements around the edges, but completely cosmetic and pointless. And so on a lot of the things, on political centralization and a great many others, And really, even the federal budget, I mean, what big difference is there between the two? One wants the budget to grow 2 percentage points more slowly than the other. I mean, well, come on now. This is ridiculous. Mm. But in this day and age, I have to say, James, and I may be expelled from the James Dellingpole circle, but I feel like if I had to choose between Democrats and Republicans, for the most part, with a handful of exceptions like DeSantis, have not distinguish themselves very well, put it that way. But at the same time, at least most of them can stand the sight of me and aren't directly, and at least they might delay and hold off really catastrophic outcomes that give me some time to organize my affairs and figure out how I'm going to cope. That's how I look at it.
Yeah. I think it's not that there are good guys and that there are bad guys, but there are bad guys and there are worse guys. And I think probably the Republicans are the bad guys, not the worst, even worse guys.
That's where things stand. Now, just before we start wrapping up, I think most Americans, myself included, really don't understand the political situation in your country. Because I understand the Democrats and the Republicans, and I understand that I know what they each favor, and I know that there isn't nearly as vast a chasm separating them as most people think. So I have a pretty good handle on what's going on. I rather suspect that this situation is replicated where you are, but I think my sense is that the people who are supposed to be on quote-unquote our side are somewhat worse there. Am I right?
Yeah. You are. Look, I think that we currently have in the UK a notionally conservative government. But actually, these are just, all of them are just meat puppets of the elites. They are carrying out an agenda which has nothing whatsoever to do with conservatism. For example, they're committed to this thing called net zero, that supposedly the evidence for man-made climate change is now so great that we have to completely destroy our country, our economy, and abandon our diesel and petrol cars and replace them with Teslas. Like, good luck with that. You know, where are you going to get the charging points? How can people afford it, etc.? That people are forced now to pay a fortune to have these new special kind of boilers to heat their homes, which don't work as well and are five times more expensive and are somehow more eco-friendly. All this stuff that this government is doing, this supposedly conservative government, you know, the party of the individual, of, you know, you get to keep more of your money, all the things that conservatives are supposed to be, they're not doing any of this stuff because they are not conservatives and they're not acting in the interests of the electorate at all. They're acting in the interests of these elites. So there's a ridiculous row going on at the moment about Boris Johnson and did he go to a party during lockdown when they weren't supposed to be having parties? And it's all just pantomime. It's meaningless because suppose Boris Johnson, the current prime minister, goes, he'll only get replaced by another stooge of the World Economic Forum. That's how the world works. I think that the political system in the world, around the world, is so broken that I don't want revolution. I don't want violent revolution especially. But I do think that it is incumbent upon all of us to not comply with this corrupt system. It is broken beyond repair. We have to find a new way. We're not living in democracies. It's beyond that. We're not going to get a better world until we've completely replaced the current system because it's corrupt and it's evil, frankly.
Outside of politics, so in the realm of culture, what brings you joy?
Oh, at the moment, two things. Fox hunting. Does that count as cultural?
Why not?
I'm really into riding. I get so happy being on a horse, especially when I'm jumping over fences. I mean, I get really scared, but it's so exhilarating when you fly over the fence and you don't die.
Sounds like it.
Oh, I love the bond you have with your horse and everything. I mean, I think horses are the best. But in cultural terms, I've just discovered the best thing, Dostoevsky. Have you read any Dostoevsky? He's fantastic. He's the best novelist.
I've started reading old classics that I should have read when I was younger, but that I'm reading now instead of scrolling on Facebook, and it's improving my life.
Well, I can tell you, I read English literature at university. So I've read the canon of English literature from Chaucer all the way to, I don't know, Evelyn Waugh. I've read a lot of novels and stuff, and I've read a few French ones as well. But I would say that the Russians knock spots off the English and the French. I mean, I like Jane Austen. I'm not a fan of Dickens, but, you know, we're okay. But the Russians are brilliant. I would say probably that the Brothers Karamazov may be the best novel I've ever read. War and Peace is pretty darn good as well. There's something about, they're great stories. There are great psychological insights into the characters. And there's a kind of epic sweep about these works. And they're quite nuanced. For example, Crime and Punishment has this reputation as being really heavy and depressing because it's about a guy who, called Raskolnikov, who, spoiler alert, axes two women to death. And it's about, you know, what happens after he's committed this terrible crime? Will he find redemption and stuff? But even somebody like Raskolnikov, who is a vicious murderer, you kind of love him and you understand him and you kind of sympathize with him and identify with him. They're a very rich experience, these Russian novels. I can't recommend them highly enough.
I will put that on my list. I actually have War and Peace and have recently started it. And I was contemplating the extreme, because I actually, as a matter of fact, was just going over during Advent, I was reading Dante's Inferno. And I happened to know the guy who did the translation that I was reading. And I just remember thinking to myself, what an undertaking this would be. You would have to have such a command of both the language and the subject matter and the art of it, the meter, the music of the language. I just couldn't imagine undertaking it. And then to read, as I was reading the foreword, about the choices that somebody who translates poetry has to make. Does he maintain the shades of meaning intended by the poet at the expense of the rhyme scheme? Well, usually they want to just discard the rhyme scheme because you can't possibly accomplish all this. And I just think, thank goodness I'm just a dumb historian. I don't have to do any of this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we can both breathe a sigh of relief that we're never going to be asked to translate a Russian novel.
No, right, I know exactly.
Or a Russian poem. But one more thing, apart from Dostoevsky, the other thing I've really got into, this is going to sound weird, the Book of Psalms. I've started learning Psalms. I've got about 7 in my head now. And I recite them to myself when I go on a run in the morning. And it's brilliant. I mean, the King James Bible, obviously, is a masterpiece of literature. Never mind, you know, the Hebrew or Greek origins of it. Read as just for its phrases alone. I mean, obviously, we get the powers that be from the King James Version. But the Psalms, there's so much in there. I recommend them.
Well, we should have had a conversation about this stuff, honestly.
Well, we can.
Yeah, well, we're going to have to do that at some point because it's just not good for us to be. It is good to have your eyes open about what's going on, but your soul is not intended to be ground down 100% of the time. That's not why we're here.
Do you know what? This has been, one of my missions. I felt the kind of calling in these last 2 years. And two things that happened with this, my two responses to the events of the last couple of years have been, one, I've realized that I am on some kind of holy mission from God to save the world from the evil cabal. And you know, it doesn't mean I'm going to necessarily be the superhero at the barricades, but it does mean I'm going to be one of the guys that gets the information out there and spreads the word. But the second thing I've determined is absolutely important is that, now I think everyone should do this, our best revenge against these horrible elites which are trying to crush is to live catching as much of our old world as we can. You know, that we want to be able to travel and we should fight for however difficult it might be, however many obstacles they put in our way, we should carry on traveling. We should carry on doing the stuff we enjoy doing, like in riding horses and fox hunting. It really matters. Living well is our best revenge.
Yeah, that is all you can do. And not consenting and also not allowing yourself to be destroyed. Those are the two things. You can't
so
go along
important.
And you can't let them win.
So many people have had their minds just messed with by what's been happening. And so many people having mental health crises and so on. And it's really important, I think, to focus on things that really matter in life. Being with friends, being with family, swimming in rivers, riding horses, reading good books. These are the kind of things that they're not going to be able to take away from us. We've got to cling on to those things. But you ask me, where can you find my stuff? Well, I mean, I'm on Locals. I'm on Substack. I'm still on Patreon and Subscribestar. So I do my podcasts, which are everywhere where they can't shut me off the platform for wrong things. So, I mean, I'm less and less on YouTube, but I am on more obscure places like Rumble and Odyssey. And yeah, I'm sure you'll find me if you look. I'm there fighting the fight.
Well, I'll put up some links on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/2062. I'm off YouTube for the most part these days because I've got my second strike. So I'm on a 2-week ban to do anything. And second strike means if within the next about just under 3-month period, if I get a third strike, I'm gone forever. And I've done nothing wrong. I mean, I don't even need to tell you that. I've done nothing wrong. The kinds of things they allow to stay up as compared to the completely benign things of mine they've taken down is so ridiculous, really. But I'm thriving anyway because I designed it that way, that I wouldn't be reliant on, absolutely 100% reliant on any one platform.
It's the way to go.
Yeah.
Otherwise, yeah. I mean, they are determined to drive us out of the ecosystem, and we mustn't let them.
Yes, agreed. Well, thank you, James Dellingpole. I look forward to our meal one of these days over in your part of the world.
Well, also, Tom, let's get you lined up for the Delling Pod, and we'll just continue that chat that we didn't have just now.
Yes, maybe so. I would enjoy that.
That would be good.
Well, thanks so much again. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks.
All right, folks, we are wrapping it up here. It's been rather a long one today, but a fun one, of course, as always, with James Dellingpole. I'm going to keep the topic for tomorrow secret. It's Bitcoin. So we'll talk then. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.